this.
Dear KBOO members, as you may have heard, KBOO is currently in a strategic planning process to map out our next 3 years, what we'll focus on, what our goals will be, and how we will achieve these goals and best serve our mission. Our Strategic Planning Support Work Group is now looking for your input to build our vision for the next 3 years. There are two ways to participate. One, take 10 minutes and complete a survey to share your vision for KBOO's near future. The survey is on the KBOO website, but paper copies are also available at the station, and the Spanish version is coming soon. Two, sign up to join a focus group. There are three focus groups organized for May 9th and May 12th. Go to kboo.fm/KBOO Strategic Plan Survey to take the survey and learn more about the focus groups. Thank you for supporting your community radio station and for investing in KBOO's future.
Cascadia. Today is Tuesday, May 10th, 2016, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, real community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. And got a little bit of weather today, sunny, highs around 79, and light north wind. Tonight, clear skies, lows around 50, north wind 5 to 11, and for tomorrow, sunny skies again with a high creeping up to 82, calm wind northwest 5 to 7 miles per hour. So that's it for the weather here in Cascadia, and it is, of course, one of the artifacts of our changing habitat, which climate is just another part of our coming, I wouldn't go so far to say habitat apocalypse, perhaps. Yeah, that's something to think about at all times, because everything that we discuss in this show and other news programming, everything bears upon the changes coming in our habitat, changes we already are experiencing, but are perhaps either ignoring, heads in the sand, bottoms to the northwest winds 5 to 11 miles per hour, and or we know about it and feel helpless, or we know about it and we are actively taking measures to slow, if possible, the changes that are ahead. So that said, and again, this is a constant reminder I have to tell myself, is all of this is connected by climate change, by habitat collapse. That is the thread running through all of it. More Panama Papers and $12 trillion offshore. The International Consortium of Investigative Journalists came out with this yesterday. It released a searchable database with information on more than 200,000 offshore entities. It is true. It is indeed true that this money, take it out of circulation, changes politics, it creates wars, it creates unimaginable poverty. But, you know, that's what it does when it's sucked out of the system. But think about this. It doesn't just sit there. Money that it sits in one place is more abundant. in some ways has a greater effect than money that is actively creating evil. The money gift does in fact keep moving. So it's not so much what happens when it is withdrawn from international circulation. It's what happens when it goes back in. What does it do? Because that money is essentially nameless and faceless. They say money has no smell, but in fact it does. This money, nameless and faceless, that is the very best armor that it could possibly have. The best armor money can buy, and the money from these secret offshore tax haven accounts can, once it is purged of its identity, enter into the political scene again, and indeed create wars. The funding for much of the horror and hardship around the world is, of course, this money back in play again. Before we talk to James Henry this morning, James was on the show last week when more of these Panama Papers had come out, talking about some of these ideas, because it is very simple to say, well, money went into an offshore tax haven and now we don't have that money in taxes. Well, yeah, that is, of course, the simple and most obvious part of the equation, but it's not the whole equation. It is perhaps not the most active part of it. Before we talk with James, we've got a couple of headlines to go through. A Canadian energy developer is creeping ever closer to installing a solar farm in Central Oregon. That would be Saturn Power. They have plans for a 10-megawatt facility that could power 1,500 homes each year. Deschutes County's permit and plan approval for the project was finalized last week after the appeal period ended without opposition, no doubt because it was not well publicized. But that said, when you hear of something like that, a Canadian company installing this type of a facility, shows that people in other countries seem to have solved the problem of employment in rural areas. Why can't we? The reason why the wailing and gnashing of teeth over the timber industry dying out. It's like, oh, well, you know, the evil, this presented as yet another incursion into the rural way of life on the part of the federal government, and they've stopped everybody from cutting down trees. The fact is that we don't have that many trees left to cut. That's a reality. The rest of it's all just politics. And that said, I'm very, very happy. We've got a couple more headlines, but I want to get straight to the Panama Papers and James Henry. I want to just point out that James Henry's books include The Blood Bankers, and another book is coming out soon, I believe. James's work has actually been cited by David K. Johnson, so that tells you a measure of where he's at. We're glad to welcome him back. Good morning, James.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
Well, it's terrific to talk with you again. I think that the press and the financial press as well has, of course, stressed that this money is in tax havens. Now we're talking about $12 trillion. But what I wanted to ask you is, one of the I suppose benefits of the money being cashed in these accounts is that it is purged of identity. It's purged of smell, so it can, when it re-enters financial markets again, it can get up to all sorts of mischief. I wondered about that. Is that somewhat close to the reality of the situation?
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of games that are being played here. For example, you know, a lot of this requires taking a very close look at the countries involved and the kind of nexus between the haven, the country, and the global haven industry that's helping to make the deals. But let's take an example of you know, I won't name names, but there's three leading Guatemalan entrepreneurs, families that are been deeply involved in the Panama Papers exposés. And, you know, big property owners in the country, big sugar mill owners, a typical use that they would put Panama companies or offshore companies would be to have, you know, their transfers that they're making or the purchases that they're making for their companies be subject to what's called misinvoicing. So let's say, for example, that they have a certain amount of revenue from selling sugar abroad. They would then load up all of the profits with some expenses from their own offshore companies that would be intermediary selling them intermediate services at preferred prices. So essentially, sucking the profit out of the value chain, so there's nothing to be taxed. And then they'll be transferring money to Swiss accounts and paying commissions to, you know, the big food companies that are basically, you know, cooperating with them in selling these commodities. So that's just one aspect of this. It shows that it's not just about private individuals or corrupt dictators. It's also about commercial companies that are, you know, gaming the system to reduce taxes. But the estimates we produced this week for the total volume of flight wealth, that's accumulated unrecorded capital flows from developing countries from 1970 to 2014, now worth about $12.1 trillion. You know, when you add all that up and then also take account of the fact that developing regions of the world have about $8.7 trillion of reserves that are invested in U.S. treasuries, and then you net out the gross debt of these countries, which is about $8.1 trillion. You get a figure that shows that the developing regions are actually lending, because most of this money is invested in first world markets. It's not invested in Panama. They're net lenders to the rich countries to the tune of $12.6 trillion. You know, we talk a lot about the tax, lost taxes on all this stuff, the tax evasion. But this is really about a different story, which is that because wealthy investors as well as corrupt dictators and kleptocrats don't feel like investing in their home countries, they're putting all this money back in the first world, earning very, very low returns on it. You know, they're not paying any taxes, obviously, but they're not so concerned necessarily about that. They want to preserve this capital. And so there would be enormous gains to the world system. This is about, you know, collectively, the offshore industry has about 10 to 15% of world wealth. You know, there would be tremendous gains if we just got this money to be reinvested in the home countries. And the question is really, you know, what do we need to do that?
So the other question, too, that arises is the issue of privacy. Privacy for individuals, privacy when it concerns our communication and transfer of information from one person to another. Obviously, we don't want that privacy invaded, but there are different sorts of privacy. So attacking the privacy surrounding these accounts may be a tricky business. It might be a delicate operation, sort of like trying to get a brain tumor out without producing a brain dead patient. What about the issue of privacy, and how would you suggest going about?
I think it's a very peculiar situation we're in. We have, you know, government agencies we all know and love, you know, found that it's now become in the last 10 years pretty easy for them to, you know, tap everybody's, you know, internet communications, at least to the point of analyzing metadata and figuring out the networks and everything. So for the masses of ordinary people who are, you know, walking around with cell phones that they can't take the batteries out of, you know, they're essentially, you know, privacy is it's not only government, it's also, you know, Google and everybody who's watching our every, you know, our locations and what we're buying and, you know, this incredibly intrusive, I mean, but valuable technology. So many of us are having to make this conscious kind of trade-off every day. Over here in this corner of reality called the offshore haven industry, I mean, the richest folks in the world, you know, the most, some of the richest people on the planet, many of the kleptocrats, and drug dealers and arms dealers and insider traders and a whole litany of different, you know, sort of bad actors are able to get, up till now, sort of ironclad privacy for their financial chicanery. And so, you know, I think at some point we have to ask whether the kind of good that they're doing with all of their offshore wealth, you know, being underinvested and, you know, derived from, in many cases, tax dodging or criminal activities, is worth the privacy that they're allowed. And, you know, the classic defense for the haven industry has been, okay, the Holocaust victim who has a Swiss bank account, and, you know, we certainly want to respect that. But when we look at the actual history of the Holocaust victims, we found that Swiss banks actually didn't pay them back. Many of them disappeared, and the money was disappeared into Swiss banks, and that the Holocaust victims spent, you know, in fact, they're still fighting to be paid by many of the Swiss bank institutions or the art galleries that appropriated their property. So I think it's easy to exaggerate the actual social value of the kind of privacy provided by the financial secrecy industry. But the balance is clearly way over on the side of helping very, very wealthy people as well as, you know, criminals of all denomination, you know, protect their secrets.
That's we have to end. I apologize. There is a lot more to talk about. There really is. And I want to thank you so much for joining us today. My guest, of course, has been James Henry. And I'll try to put links up on the website. There's so much more to talk about. This has been, of course,